History Makers with Matt Prater.
Coming off of drugs, you're going to have emotional problems, but I kept chasing after God.
And he's using this vehicle to bring people out of the dark into the light.
And I went forward and I knelt at the front, and it was a radical conversion experience.
And that's where the big change happened, and that's where we decided we're going to use our music for God, we're going to change our songs.
When I was about 25-year-old, I was busted and into jail, and it was there that I came to the Lord.
History Makers with Matt Prater.
Hi, I'm Steve McKenna, filling in for Matt Prater today on History Makers, and welcome to History Makers. Today, a special guest named Woon Oi. He was a police officer and a hostage negotiator. He's still a young guy, and he moved to Melbourne at the very young age, and grew up in Melbourne. He came originally from Malaysia. Woon Oi. G'day, Woon. How are you doing?
G'day, Steve. Well, thank you.
That's good. Now, this guy here, he's got a very interesting story. He's a husband and a dad, but he's also a former police officer, a retired hostage negotiator, an interesting career, an interesting life. So you moved to Melbourne, or to Australia, at the age of 5. What happened there? You moved with your family, obviously, all the way from Malaysia. Now, whereabouts in Malaysia are you from originally?
Yeah, that's an interesting part, Steve, because I was adopted at birth, and I don't know exactly where I was born, but as an infant, I was adopted into a Christian family, and
right.
I didn't find out I was adopted till I was 37 years old.
Right.
So we moved over to Australia, and back then I was 5 years old in 1985. So you know how old I am now, and I'm still glad that you call me young. at 46, that's always a compliment. And my parents thought it would be an interesting social experiment bringing up a 5-year old non-English speaking Chinese looking person in Frankston. If you're unfamiliar with Frankston, it lives up to its reputation, put it that way.
Yes, good old Frankston. Yeah, we've got to love the peninsula, though. Lovely down there. Now, how did you go? I mean, you weren't speaking English. You had to learn English at a very young age. And how did you manage to deal with that situation at such a young age?
It was quite challenging, to be honest. I'm quite an optimist. I always have been.
Mm.
I went to school on my very first day at Frankston Primary, and I remember at recess that the kids in the playground were teasing me, and even though I couldn't understand the language, you can tell through body language that that was the case.
Yeah.
And when I walked out onto the oval, they started kicking balls at me, and then eventually one of those balls hit me on the head, and because I was a bit nervous, I was sweating anyway, but I reached up to my brow and I wiped the sweat away and realized that it was actually blood. And
right.
So I was rushed to the doctors, and where I received 7 stitches in my head. So that was introduction to primary school.
Now, you eventually moved to Geelong. What age did you move to Geelong?
So 7 years old, I moved to Geelong into a beautiful part of town called Bell Post Hill, where Dad currently is still. And that was predominantly, that primary school I went to was predominantly European, Macedonian, Greek, Serbian, Croatian. I actually learned how to speak Macedonian fluently as a result, which was pretty cool. And soon after that, probably 3 years into my settlement in Geelong, my dad owned a restaurant in the main part of town. And I think that's where things started taking a turn in the wrong direction for me. And when I say wrong direction, that's when I started getting into trouble, not knowingly, and I was quite naive at 12, at 10 years old, apologies. And
yeah,
Dad used to give me coins from the payphone that sat on the counter of his restaurant. And he used to take the 20-cent pieces out and say, son, go down the street. You can go play pinball machines at a place called the Golden Q. And what we didn't know at the time was that there was some gang activity that was starting to brew up in Geelong, and I started getting groomed by some of those members.
Now, you shared your story about migrating at a young age and then finding it difficult to fit in at school and experiencing some bullying. How do you see some of those childhood experiences playing out now in what you're talking about? Is there some trauma or something that may have contributed to you joining in that path of a group like this?
Yeah, look, I've got a number of philosophies in my life or mantras, and one of them is, how do you make your worst day your best day? And so I think the number of worst days in my life has given me the inspiration to go on and really make a difference out of that, you know, to support others who are on the fringe or on the margin, and also to encourage others who are feeling that way, that's, you know, a little bit outside of the mainstream, that they've actually got a real important part to play as well. So that's been a real driver for me. And I think more broadly, I love speaking to whoever will listen, to be honest, because I think deep down within all of us, you know, we have a choice, and we've got such greatness in all of us, and we really have a choice on what we do with that. You know, I really love what Solzhenitsyn said, the line between good and evil runs down the heart of every man, and we get to choose every day which side of that line we stand on with the little things that we do. So what I do now is I speak to many people throughout the week in different settings, and my main message is that you do have the power. Like you are created, you know, as the word says, in the image of God, which means that, you know, we can speak things into existence. And you know, as you know, my background's a hostage negotiator, and I spent over a decade using language to convince and influence others to make right decisions. So, and I really believe that we can do that for ourselves. And in doing that, we can make the world a better place.
So Woon, your life turned around. You had the come back to Jesus moment, so to speak. And then you went to uni after school. And after uni, you joined the police force. What did that all look like for you, joining the police force? You had an interesting career there.
Yeah, again, driven by a very simple philosophy, say yes, work it out later. And so I said yes to every opportunity that I had. And it really began for me when they were looking for someone to spend time with the kids from the commission houses in Kensington during school holidays. And, you know, most police officers join the job to catch crooks and drive fast cars. And so nobody wanted to do it. But I put my hand up. And it was one of the most incredible experiences, hanging out with these kids that would normally see our divvy van when I did the patrols and run from us. Now these kids would see the divvy van start to run, but then I'll call out and then they'll come running back. So again, I started realizing the power of connection. And soon after that, I got offered an opportunity to join the sexual offences and child abuse investigation team.
Right.
And that's when I really started looking at language more closely, because we were trained in cognitive behavioral interviewing, or cognitive interviewing techniques, it was called. And so basically what that was how to read body language and how to use your body as a powerful messaging tool when you are speaking to vulnerable people. So I did that for 3.5 years, then took a hard pivot to become a special weapons instructor, and then got promoted to the academy, developing and designing and testing those techniques and those weapons. From there, I was promoted quite early to the rank of sergeant, and I've completed my tenure there as a sergeant and was recruited into the critical incident response team. Which I guess is, you know, for most people who may not be familiar with CERT, I guess the closest equivalent would be SWAT, let's say.
Yeah.
And so we would all be qualified in the tactical operations. So you'd see the helmets, the balaclavas, the vests, the machine guns, that type of thing. But once you were qualified, you got to choose to be a close personal protection operative or choose to be a hostage negotiator. And because I was there for such a long time, I got to do both, which was pretty cool. Most of my great work was around hostage negotiations. We average in Victoria 1,650 call-outs per year, which is quite a lot. And obviously not all of them are hostage situations, but they would use our expertise to resolve situations that involved high emotions. And so we would find ourselves, with people who, let's just say, are not looking forward to tomorrow. And we learned how to, and through experience and training, how to, I guess, sit with somebody and help them find an alternative way. And we would call that, how do we get someone back into the window of cognitive flexibility? Because outside of that window, their thinking is rigid. So we would employ hostage negotiation techniques to develop a connection with them, to bring them into a safe psychological space, and then help them see things that aren't as rigid.
That's such a huge job. And even though you've explained it so well, I don't think any of us really can fully comprehend what a day-to-day would be like as a hostage negotiator. Now, were you allowed to bring your faith into that? You're talking to people in desperate situations, and ultimately, everyone needs Jesus, don't they? These people are stuck. For want of another word, they're stuck. Yeah, you have found in your life salvation, hope, and healing. So does faith and your role as an officer intersect in any way?
I used to pray all the time. So I used to pray for my team, for the people that I'd meet on the other side of that door when it went in. So everyone has their rituals when we move from what we call the final action point to the point that we breach the stronghold. Some people listen to music, other people will breathe, all that, but I used to just pray. So there's been times where my men, because I went in as a sergeant, as a supervisor, but my men would say to me, like, because there's been times where I've actually hugged people that have come out of a stronghold, and that have been so violent towards us only moments prior. And what helps me stay in that moment, and the secret to my success, is I saw each and every one of them as a child of God that was made in the image of God. So for me, I didn't see them as a crook, or I didn't see them as a hostage taker, or someone that I was in a siege with. I just saw them that they were someone that was just like me, that has made a choice to cross that line between good and evil that resides in even my heart. And so it made it easy for me to do my job that way, and it sustained me as far as my energy goes and my focus, but it also helped me empathize with people, and that is really the key ingredient of bringing someone into that safe psychological space to make right decisions.
So, Woon, we're going to go back a little bit from before you're on the force. You found Jesus, you came back to your faith, and some close friends of yours had a very big impact on you. They had a radical transformation themselves. They found Jesus, and that alone would have had an impact on you as well.
Yeah, I think we all do the Christian walk a different way. My best friend, and still my best friend, Chris, who you mentioned, is a Dutch. He's got a saying, if you're not Dutch, you're not much. And he literally lived his life that way. And he had a radical transformation. And when you do, you want to tell everyone about it.
Now, your friend had a little trick he used to help you, find Christ. He used to change the radio in your car, you were telling me before, from whatever you were listening to the local Christian radio station. And you'd come in, and there it was, Christian music playing in your car. What did you do?
He would always jump in my car, then I'd have to change it to a different channel. And so that happened, for either weeks or months. One day I got in my car and I started the car, and it happened to be Michael W. Smith singing his very famous song, Breathe. And I just remember driving through the streets of Geelong West, and I just, there was tears coming down my face, and I felt like those words were speaking to my heart directly. And I remember driving over to Chris and his wife Judy's house in Geelong West, and it was almost like they were waiting for me almost like they knew that I was coming because they were both out the front. When they saw me and they saw me in tears, they embraced me and we sat on this really manky old green ripped up couch that I actually put on their porch, their beautiful home, but I left it on the porch there as a bit of a prank so that they would see that when they came out of their house one morning and they happened to have left it there for a few days. And I remember sitting on that couch and Chris and Judy laid their hands on me and prayed for me. And that's when I felt that was when I really made a commitment to follow Jesus Christ in that moment.
I guess that had a huge impact on your life there on in.
Yes, I think so. And I think people find this in so many different ways, but I feel like, being a Christian person has given me the frameworks for purpose and meaning in life. And I think, whether you're a Christian or not, or you follow other faiths and religions, I think what people really need is to have a sense that they're living for more than just their careers or even their family or their interests or to use their gifts to serve others. I really feel like it's hard to live a fulfilled life and a full life if you're not connected with your meaning and your purpose for being on this earth.
Now, you've had a radical transformation in your life. What is one of the biggest things for you that has impacted your life over the years once you have been saved?
I think it's the renewing that things will die, but they'll be born again. I think I read the Bible in such a different way now, having gone through some psychological challenges of my own and then having overcome. I've gone back to the Bible and I've seen the psychological patterns that are laid out for us. And quite often, when I speak to people, I've got the honor and the privilege to speak to many. And they would say to me, "Where do you think I should start?" And I would always say, whether you believe in the Christian God or not, pick up the Bible and look at the patterns in there because it's full of psychological truths of the way that you should live your life, that after darkness, there is light, after chaos, there's order, and using your language to be able to speak forth what you want to see manifest in your life. And that's what God did 10 times in Genesis.
How about your family, your wife and your kids? You're married, you've got some kids. Tell us about your family.
Well, I actually met my wife, Amy, volunteering for a Christian organization called Red Frogs.
Oh,
And
yes.
that was in 2004, only weeks after my experience in my Toyota Celica with Michael W. Smith, who I feel like I've got a deep connection with, who doesn't even know me. And I met her at a training session for Red Frogs, and we actually became quite close as friends. And we were friends for a couple of years before it became romantic. And then soon after that, we got married. And now we have three beautiful daughters.
Now, when someone who's been stuck in a hard place and they seem fixed in that, and look, they hear your story and you haven't exactly had it all together all your life, you finally have. What would be your advice to them today?
It's funny you use the word fixed and stuck. I firmly believe whatever we speak forth, speak out, that's what we can manifest in our lives. And so I wonder when I speak to people who feel stuck, what their language actually is like and what they actually see their life and how they see their life and how they want their life to be. So I spend a lot of time with people, either one-on-one or in groups, developing that vision for their life. And so I think sometimes we get stuck because that's all we can see. And so it is helpful to read the Bible, read other literature, it doesn't matter, but particularly the Bible, because in there it describes a life that God wants us to live or how He wants us to live. And so that's a really good place to start if you're stuck, right? Because whatever you focus on, you get.
Well, Woon Oi, it's been amazing to hear your story today. It's such an encouraging story and amazing history of being a police officer and hostage negotiator. I can't even imagine doing that. It's incredible. Woon, I think you're a history maker. Thank you for joining us today on History Makers.
If you'd like to hear this conversation again, listen online anytime at historymakersradio.com. There you'll also find links to all of our social media channels, and you can subscribe to our iTunes podcast. History Makers is a faith-based ministry, and we want to thank everyone for their generous support. If you've got a suggestion of anyone we should interview, send us an email, info@historymakersradio.com. God bless. I'm Matt Prater, and my challenge to you now is to go and make history.
Looking for fashion that feels like you? Kindred Boutique is where style meets heart. From effortlessly chic outfits to those little details that make all the difference, Kindred Boutique curates pieces you'll love wearing again and again. Thoughtfully chosen, beautifully made, perfect for every day and special moments. Because at Kindred Boutique, it's not just about clothes, it's about connection. Discover your new favourites at Kindred Boutique. Shop online now at kindredboutique.com.au. Find your style, find your people.